Leave him alone! Get off of me! I told you, stop making me come and score for you!
Are you okay?
I told you, stop making me come and score for you!
Oh my God!
Listen!
Jiminy!
Oh,
Jiminy!
Shit, that's a good ass man!
Michael Malice here, that's right. I'm a grown ass man to give you some nightshade to sit on. Our top story tonight, a Connecticut woman says Joe Biden touched her inappropriately and rubbed noses with her during a 2009 political fundraiser in Greenwich when he was president, drawing further scrutiny to the former Democrat and his history of unwanted contact with women as he ponders a presidential run. Now, yesterday, three additional women told the Washington Post about encounters with him that made them feel uncomfortable. That means the total number of people who've expressed concerns about interactions with Biden is up to seven. Other women defended him, who has been defended Biden, who has been seen by many women as an advocate for them. Now, her name is Vail Connard Yaunt. We'll call her Vail. Said she was a White House intern during the spring of 2013, and one day she tried to exit the basement of the West Wing when she was asked to step aside so Biden could enter. After she moved out of the way, she said Biden approached her to introduce himself and shake her hand. As she put it, he then put his hand on the back of my head. Does this sound familiar? I'm not doing a bit. This is actually what she said. He then put his hand on the back of my head and pressed his forehead to my forehead while he talked to me. I was so shocked that it was hard to focus on what he was saying. I remember he told me that I was, quote, a pretty girl. No one ever tells me that. And I keep sending out tweets asking for that. They just tell me to learn to code, and then they get suspended. So fuck you. This is her statement to the Washington Post. She described feeling uncomfortable and embarrassed that he had commented on her appearance in a professional setting, even though it was intended as a compliment. She goes, I do not consider my experience to have been sexual assault or harassment. She believes his intentions were good, but she says, it was the kind of inappropriate behavior that makes many women feel uncomfortable and unequal in the workplace. What's amazing about this is Matt Walsh, I think he's with the Daily Caller, sent out a tweet yesterday, and he's really not exactly the sharpest tool in the Home Depot. And he's like, oh, none of the stuff that Biden does reaches the level, anywhere close to the level of sexual assault. All these conservatives are acting in bad faith. This is a White House intern who was Democrat. She's specifically saying it's not assault. I don't think I've seen anyone saying that this is assault. I think everyone is saying this is a pattern of inappropriate behavior and not recognizing boundaries. It's like, well, if it's not assault, then there's no problem. That's the problem. That's exactly the problem. And it's not a political issue. It's perfectly appropriate to say just because something is not a crime does not mean it is acceptable. Here's another easy example. People who don't tip at a restaurant. You know who you are. It's just, it's gross. Now, that might not be relevant in terms of who you're going to vote for. But in stuff like this, that might be relevant. That's up to the voters to decide. In response to the video, which I showed yesterday, she said, I appreciate his attempt to do better in the future, but to me, this is not mainly about whether Joe Biden has adequate respect for personal space. It's about women deserving equal respect in the workplace. Okay. The allegations have dominated coverage since last week, and President Trump yesterday said Biden should not apologize for his behavior.
Of course he did.
Oh, my God. That's so beautiful. Fucking mind games. At the same time as the president said Biden shouldn't apologize for his behavior, a pro-Trump super PAC circulated an online ad casting his interactions with women and girls in a negative light. I love it. Now, another girl is named Sophie Karasik. She was part of a group of 51 sexual assault survivors who appeared on stage at the Oscars with Lady Gaga that year. Biden introduced the singer's performance. Karasik said, as she met Biden after the ceremony, She was thinking about a college student who had been sexually assaulted and recently died by suicide. She decided to share the story with the then vice president. And this is also what I talked about yesterday. When you're the vice president, you're a politician, people feel comfortable unburdening themselves to you, and they want to feel a connection, even though you're not going to do anything sometimes, and it makes them feel better. And when there's some kind of tactile thing, it actually is appropriate. So she said Biden responded by clasping her hands and leaning down to place his forehead against hers, which is a moment captured in a widely circulated photograph. She said she appreciated his support, but also felt awkward and uncomfortable, but that his gesture had left their faces suddenly inches apart. Okay. This is where I get off the train. You want to talk about awkward, uncomfortable? Hi, I've never met you, but you're telling me about your friend who was raped and then killed herself. What the fuck am I supposed to do? So I don't think there is a real protocol when a stranger comes up to you. Hi, nice to meet you. I'm Michael Malice. Oh, you know, my friend was raped and then killed herself. Oh, okay. What do you do? So I think in that case, when he's trying to kind of give her a hug or comfort, that is the most human appropriate thing. She said she did not know how to respond to it. Yeah, you think? What the fuck is he saying?
She's like that person in class that raises her hand and then says, well, this isn't really a question.
Oh, yeah. my God. And you know what? It's like, look, you went through this horrible tragedy. I'm sure it was absolutely awful. First of all, you have to learn about your friend's assault, which is, I mean, that'll fuck with anyone's head. And then you have to learn, like, you could have done something. You have questions. Should I have done something? My God, why didn't she feel heard? Why didn't I call someone? This is awful. And then it's like, well, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell the vice president. What the fuck? And oh, my God, he's acting inappropriately. Damn. She said Biden crossed the boundary into her personal space at a sensitive moment. What the okay, and there's another one. Amy Call. She was a young Democratic staffer helping run a reception of about 50 people when Biden entered the room. She said she was then introduced to him, that he leaned in, squeezed her shoulders, and delivered a compliment about her smile, holding her, as she put it, quote, for a beat too long. Call runs something called the Purple Campaign, which is a nonprofit group that fights sexual harassment. She said she felt nervous and excited about meeting him at the time and shrugged off feelings of discomfort. Now, she says that she feels his behavior was out of place and inappropriate in the context of a work situation. He's the vice president. He's not your boss. There's been a lack of understanding about the way that power can turn something that might seem innocuous and something that can make somebody feel uncomfortable. That is true. She consults with companies about their workplace policies. She said his video demonstrates a continued lack of understanding about why these stories are being told and their relevance in the Me Too era. Okay, I'm going to defend Biden again. There's a certain sect of feminism, and for you to be initiated into this club, you have to have your own story of how you were harassed or assaulted. And if someone's holding your shoulders for a beat too long, now that could be creepy as hell. If there's like an eye contact thing and it's a signal, that's true. She's not saying that. She said he held her shoulders. She came up to him. She was excited to meet him. You're a vice president. People are excited to meet you, unless you're Dan Quayle. They come up to you. Oh, my God, you're the vice president. You're like, okay, nice. I'm guessing. I don't think that would be that weird. People who have observed or interacted with Biden said pulling people toward him to touch foreheads is a common gesture he employs with men and women. Now, Nancy Pelosi, whose forehead does not need comment on this show, said this weekend that the allegations against Biden are not disqualifying, but he should learn to avoid such intimate physical behavior in political settings. She said, I think it's important for the vice president and others to understand that it isn't what you intended, it's how it was received. She said this on Tuesday at an event in Washington. She also challenged his response to the controversy on Sunday, where he stated he never intended to act inappropriately, but if it is suggested I did so, I will listen respectfully. She said, to say I'm sorry that you were offended is not an apology, Pelosi said. That's not accepting the fact that people think differently about communication, whether it's a handshake, a hug. He has to understand in the world that we're in now that people's space is important to them, and what's important is how they receive it, not necessarily how you intended it. Very well put and very fair statement from Speaker Pelosi. So that's where things stand with Uncle Joe Biden. And there's been other articles that if Biden doesn't run, Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of New York City, is considering running and entering his hat, throwing his hat into the ring, because as he was thinking about it, him and Biden would compete for the exact same demographic, the same kind of voters, and they come from similar demographics. I mean, Bloomberg's a businessman. He's Jewish. I think Biden's Catholic. Is Biden Catholic? Can we look that up? I'm pretty sure he's Catholic. Even though he's waspy as hell, his name's like Will. I think his middle name's like Will Met or something, or his first name. The point is, can we look it up? Oh, yeah, sorry. Sorry. Okay, sorry. I just saw you staring at me, Drew. I'm just like,
well,
okay.
I got this video ready. I don't know if you're trying to go for that.
Yeah, yeah. So, wait, which video?
The one with Sessions.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We'll get to that in a second. But if Biden doesn't run, then Bloomberg's like, okay, now there is a lane for me to take over. Elder statesman of the – he wasn't a Democrat, but certainly that kind of let's make government work effectively, non-ideological mindset. Okay. And that video we were looking about yesterday when Jeff Sessions was on to Joe Biden and his handsy ways, I found the clip. I sent it in. Let's watch this clip now. So that's Jeff Sessions at the bottom left with his granddaughter. And you see Biden reaches – and look, Sessions, like, get their fucking hand away from her. And here goes again. He just needs to touch children. And here's the slow motion. There it is. There's the get the fuck away. Yeah. The fuck you doing? And then Joe Biden just stands around looking sheepishly. I hope that wasn't on camera. Yeah, so that's that. Is he Catholic?
Yeah, he is Catholic.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, so we're going to have two minority religions, so to speak. Let's talk about the Democratic primary, the big primary before the votes happen, which will be in, what, January of next year. We got some time for that, is the money primary. So a bunch of Democratic candidates are touting how much money they've fundraised in the first period of a primary fight. It's going to last until next spring at the least. Now, the totals ran through March 31st. They're the first objective real measure of how the candidates are faring. Now, the details won't be known until they all file their disclosures by April 15th. But here are some takeaways that the campaigns have released so far. Sanders, Bernie Sanders, he's at the top of all the polls among primary voters, but he has something that Biden doesn't have yet, which is a campaign organization raking in the cash. The senator made a lot of money in 2016 when he tried to take on Hillary Clinton, especially through small donors, which he boasted about very frequently, raised more than $18 million. In the 41 days between his official campaign launch and March 31st, which means he has $28 million on hand. That's a lot of dough. So that is expected to put that's the lead in the Democratic field, and it's going to put pressure on other Democrats, including Joe Biden, who has to navigate all those accusations that I just went through a second ago. Senator Kamala Harris from California, she raked in $12 million. Beto O'Rourke from Texas didn't offer a fundraising total, but aides say he raised more than $1 million over the weekend, and previously he had raised more than $6 million in his first 24 hours as a candidate. These are big differences between 28 and 7. That's a lot. That's quadruple. Now, Sanders' whole haul shows that his base is just as enthusiastic as it was 4 years ago, and it may even be growing. His campaign said that out of his 525,000 unique donors, 500,000, about 20% of them are new, 100,000 are registered independent, and about 20,000 are registered Republicans. As impressive as that fundraising is, it's not as large as previous contenders who were more reliant on big donors. In her first quarter as candidate in 2016, Hillary got $45 million. And in 2007, when Obama was taking on Clinton for the 2008 nomination, Clinton opened with an initial fundraising quarter of $36 million, but Obama had pulled in $26 million, which is a big achievement for a field that was supposed to clearly be Hillary's year. Now, Sanders' fundraising haul sets the curve for all the candidates and is going to give pause to some of the other people, particularly people like Kamala Harris, Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, Cory Booker of Jersey, Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, and Senator Warren of Massachusetts. And Harris is the only one from that group to release her fundraising totals. And that's a big deal, because if you got the good numbers, two things happen. It scares people away from entering the race. Three things happen. You have headlines, like, look, I've raised all this money. And it's easier to raise more money once you've raised some money, because now you're a legitimate candidate. People want to bet on a winning horse, especially in politics where it's pay for play very often. But the biggest surprise winner, and every year this happens, someone comes out of nowhere and they kind of make a run for the polls. Steve Forbes was one example of this. Trump did it and he actually got the nomination. His name is Pete Buttigieg. That's right. I pronounced it correctly. So he is a very young man. He is a mayor from South Bend, Indiana, I believe. If we got scrolled up a little bit more, we could see that. Yeah, yeah. South Bend, Indiana. 37 years old. Gay. He raised $7 million. More than Beto. And he says that's a great look for our first quarter. This means he can finance a legitimate campaign operation for months as long as he's not a big spender. This positions him very well to be a great token vice president, by the way. So Scott Walker learned in the 2005 presidential campaign that being an early fundraising leader is no guarantee of success because you spent big and ran out of money driving up before Iowa. He was my pick before Trump got in terms of who did I think was going to actually get the nomination. But the important thing is Buttigieg says he has almost 160,000 unique donors. And now that meets the fundraising thresholds that the DNC has set for candidates to qualify for the initial summer debates that are not that far off. God, it's April already. So it's like in a couple months, we're going to have debates from these loons. I for one, cannot wait for that at all. And here's a story that's of very big relevance to what those debates are going to look like. Julian Castro out of Texas, who does not look like he has a very big chance at the nomination. He could have been that wild card candidate, but it looks like Buttigieg is going to be that wild card candidate. But what happens is when you have to do those Hail Marys. So when you throw out those Hail Marys, the question is, do the other candidates say, yeah, me too? Or do they say, no, I draw the line, but then they're running to your right? Because if anyone is making any they're running to the left in the primary. So they're going to be out competing each other for the base, which has really gotten quite radical in the last 4 years. And that's from both sides, on the Republican base and the Democratic base. Now, Julian Castro unveiled an immigration plan Tuesday. He had served as Secretary of Housing and Urban Development in the Obama administration. He's the first one of the Democrats to present a detailed immigration plan. Now, it comes as he struggles to gain traction in the field, and he's the only Latino. He outlined his vision in a post. He goes, the slogan behind his proposal is putting people first. What a vapid. I mean, I think literally every person has had that as their slogan at some point or used that phrase. He goes, but in this case, the people he's referring to are would-be immigrants to the United States. He would extend legal rights and eventual citizenship to all. Yep, we're doing God's mistakes. Spoiler. To all people.
That was actually one of God's mistakes, not mine.
Why did that even change?
I was making sure that some sound didn't come on at the wrong time and instead, okay.
Got it. So it would extend legal rights and citizenship to all people who are already illegally here, make it substantially easier to legally and illegally immigrate, and make enforcement of immigration law substantially harder by removing law enforcement from the equation almost entirely. Surprisingly, the most basic aspect of his plan is the legalization proposal. He proposes a pathway to full and equal citizenship for all estimated 11 million people currently illegal in the United States. This explicitly includes DACAs, childhood arrivals, and the parents of children born in the United States from the anchor babies, as well as beneficiaries of temporary protected status. He would also seek to end the bars that prohibit previously illegal resident spouses of United States citizenship from acquiring a green card without a waiting period of up to 10 years. This would be part of a substantial expansion of legal family immigration under the Reuniting Families Act, which allocates thousands of visas for family immigration and does away with caps on immigration by type of relative and country of origin. And the consequence of this is a substantial increase in their already high levels of family immigration. The average immigrant is already responsible for an additional 3 to 4 family members' arrival. They should send them all back other than me. Let's send the rest of my family back. That'd be perfectly fine.
Even your sister?
She knows what she did. She likes Britney Spears, not ironically. She's pretty fucking basic. New enough to send. She was born here.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but she has to go back. It's good. It's you or me, miss. On top of these changes, the plan would reverse cuts to the refugee program made under Trump. It would also undo guidance issued by former Attorney General Jeff Sessions, which curtailed abuse of the asylum system through a definition of qualification for asylum previously imposed by an Obama-era immigration court, and would create deportation protection for temporary farm workers under the Agricultural Worker Program Act. So I can't wait to see them all compete on this stuff and then see Trump call them on it in real time during the campaign, because it's going to be really hard. Immigration is one of those issues where it's really easy to demagogue it, and it's going to get the people who voted for Trump last time to get them out again, which is ironic because he hasn't built the fucking wall. But that was his big thing, the wall, the wall, the wall. And there, and then he says, oh, there's a wall. We've just had it the whole time. He just did this curtain thing. It's like, oh, shit, there's the wall. It's been there. So I'm going to move on to the next segment. This is a segment you all know and you all love. I've had this one queued up for quite a few weeks in an entire group of animals you probably haven't heard of. Yes, it is time for God's Mistakes. Now take a look at this serial killer dressed as a nun. What are God's mistakes? He or she doesn't know. All he knows is how to take people back to his home and kill them. Now, God's mistakes are the most epic forms of life, and especially the ones that God created, threw in the bottom of the ocean and said, no one's going to see this shit. I fucked up. I done goofed. Well, there's an entire group of God's mistakes, and they're called, no relation, sea spiders. Let's take a look at what a sea spider looks like. Let's do the second. Can we do the second video first? This is one from Antarctica. No, we'll do the first one first because it's the pretty one. Then we're going to do the hideous nightmare one. So this is what they look like when they're swimming. So you could see they look kind of like sea lilies when they swim. This is deep sea stuff. It's very kind of like, it almost doesn't look organic, right? It looks like it looks like music. Because it's just like kind of like how a sine wave. It's kind of how the notes go one after the other. Or one of those things where you turn the knob and the sculpture moves.
Kind of like how like an engine, like
yeah,
the
yeah,
are
like a piston,
revolving.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just I've never seen footage of them swimming. They very rarely swim. Notice they don't really have heads. A sea spider is basically just a mass of. Those aren't even really legs. We're gonna get to that in a second, but this is what they look like. They're obviously not very good swimmers either, but this is what they look like. You can't even tell where the front from the back is. It's just like what do you call that when you have a mathematical drawing and it gets smaller and bigger and it just replicates over as you zoom in.
Fractal.
Yeah, it looks like a fractal. How the fuck did you know that?
It's a hippie thing.
Oh Jesus Christ! Man, it's a curveball. Good work, Drew. Yeah, there's something fractal about how it's moving. And maybe I'm not using that word correctly, but there's something very mathematical about using. Now, they can be tiny. However, in Antarctica, things like starfish get gigantic, things like anemones get gigantic, and things like sea spiders get gigantic. They get up to a meter long. That's a little bit over a yard. Let's take a look at one of these Antarctican ones. So this is the thing. I think we can fast forward a little bit of this. Yeah. There it is, walking at the bottom of the ocean. Reminds me, some of you might know, I don't know what you call them where you live, but here in New York, they call them daddy long legs or harvestmen, which are actually, I think, mites on long legs. They're spider relatives, they're arachnids. I think the fact that it's going so slow makes it much, much more of a nightmare, because there's this feeling like when you're dreaming and something's coming at you slowly, but you're paralyzed and you're like, holy shit. Oh my God, the shadows. Look at the shadows. Good Lord, that entity. So, what are sea spiders? It's like 1,600 species. So, they're marine arthropods. You find them all over the world. They use their snout to suck out the juices. You see that one has a very long snout at the front, different color, to suck out juices from sea anemones. Or, They tear apart worms and other slow-moving, soft-bodied prey to bite-sized chunks. Now, the shallow water species can be only a single millimeter. We have one that's single millimeter, right? 1 mm long, 0.04. Look at that. And those in the deep sea can reach over 2.3 feet. Now, those legs are really important because the rest of the body is so small that this one has a bigger body, that the parts of their digestive system extend into their legs. They even, go to the next picture. Look at that. They even breathe in their legs. They absorb oxygen through them as though they were gills. It's all surface area. There's no like inside with them. And of course, they use those stilts to walk as well. I think we got a couple. Yeah. So some of them are very colorful. And some of them are, yeah, so they're very pretty. You could see how that would camouflage very well because there's no eyes. There's two little eyes sometimes, but you can't really focus on what it is that you're looking at. It just looks like discoloration. They could be very, very tiny. It looks like, you know what it looks like? Also looks like when a leaf has died and all the thing that's left is the webbing. That's what that looks like. So sea spiders, absolutely, they're not spiders, but they are one of God's mistakes. And our last story from today, from April Fool's. Shit, we should have done an April Fool's show. That was stupid of me.
It's always next year, I guess.
Yeah, that's okay, that's true. Okay, so this is a big one. There was a petition in Marina High School in Huntington Beach, where Tito Ortiz is from, asking students of color for permission to use the N-word. This caused school officials to discipline two students. Dwayne Dishmo. Dishmo? Is that what it says?
With an N, Dishno.
Dishno. Dwayne Dishno, who's the president of the school district, said the petition was a bad joke gone wrong on April Fool's Day. Is that it? Okay. Kids made a mistake. It's been dealt with. Everyone is okay. Now, a student offended by the handwritten petition addressed to quote-unquote brown people took a picture of it, shared it on social media, I'm guessing WorldStar, and notified the principal after school. The student who shared photos of the petition online said in a social media post that it was deeply offensive and hurtful. The parents of the two students were contacted and their children were disciplined the next day. They were lynched because the school district really likes irony. And added the students were remorseful, although they claimed they didn't do nothing. The students who shared photos of the petition online didn't see the attempt at humor. The fact that this boy has the audacity to ask me and my melanin girly to sign an N-word pass is appalling and a perfect representation of Marina High School. If you're from my school, please give me this boy's at. Please, this is disgusting. Y'all can think it's a joke all you want. This is gross and wrong. And for you to say the N-word isn't used like that anymore. A second picture shows the handwritten petition with the title Brown People, and the text is barely legible, but has about 15 signatures at the time that they were just taken. Slander a whole race? Who says that without genuinely meaning it? This allows me to slander a whole race? The district did not release the names or ages of the students involved in the prank or exactly what kind of discipline they received. Although they called the parents. And the mom goes, yeah, this is me. Petition. Now wait just a cotton picking minute. Boom. Boom. Roasted. The president said school officials told him the offended student posted on her Facebook page that her school has taken the situation very seriously and the boys are dealing with consequences for their actions. Thank you again for the support. It means the world to me. And the school principal did not respond to request for comment. And a mother of a student not involved in the incident had to open her gums and put her opinion forth, but we're not going to repeat it because it's not about you, lady. But here at Nightshade, it is all about you. So I hope you guys have a terrific weekend. You really ought to watch this week's You're Welcome, where me and Will Chamberlain go ham on the subject of social media censorship. It's on YouTube right now. And until Monday, I will wish you nothing but sweet dreams.
You must have a television.